everyone. Thank you so much for joining me. I have a return guest today, and I'm quite excited because when she was here back in, 5 or 6 months ago, she was just about to release her book, and it has now officially been released, and we're going to talk about that. And she was just telling me something before we came on air about some other exciting things going on. So I have my introduction. I'm going to go ahead and do that for anybody who's not heard this. This is Hashtag No Limits, and Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society places limits upon but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says, in Hamlet, we know who we are but not who we will be, and I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into cells, and then it has to reform into the butterfly. As if that wasn't challenging enough, it then has to struggle and fight in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly once it gets out of the cocoon. I can't imagine that any of that is easy, but neither is busting through the limits that society places upon us. And Olivia is here. Normally, my guests have a lot more to do with the student or the child, but she is here to talk about the educators, because our educators are struggling right now. And they have been struggling for quite a few years. And so she's brought some innovative and exciting ways for them to bust through those limits. Olivia, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Shelley. Props to you to providing a platform like this to keep exposing people to be limitless in their thinking. So I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm so excited to have you back because the last time you were on, like, your energy was just coming through the screen at me. And I really need that today. I didn't sleep well last night, so I need to grab some of that energy so I can finish out the rest of my day.
No problem. Yeah, the fire is always burning over here. The fire is always burning.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. So as I mentioned in the intro, you had a book. It wasn't quite ready to come out, but it has come out now. Tell us about that book and give us some. Oh, and by the way, for those of you who are watching, I almost forgot this. You have an opportunity to win a copy of Olivia's book that she's going to talk about. And I'm going to let her talk about the book, and I'm going to put in the criteria down in the bottom and into the chat as to how you can take a chance at winning that book.
Sounds great. Yes, the name of the book is called Spark Curiosity, A Guide to Quick Inquiry Task. And so at the end of the day, many teachers are overwhelmed with all of the things they have to do on their checklist. But at the end of the day, we need to improve the learning experience of students because we know a lot of it has been so geared towards the standardized tests. A lot of teachers I talk to, they always tell me, oh, I wish I could do more inquiry in class. I wish I could do more projects, but I got to get them ready for this test. So I'm a teacher, I'm in the classroom, and I'm saying there's got to be a way for me to get students to think before I start teaching them something. And so I came up with these quick tasks that take about 5 to 7 minutes for students to do, but we have a discussion about it, and then we kind of summarize the thinking for the whole purposes. There's a couple purposes. One of the purposes, I want to give everyone a doorway into the content. So if they didn't have any prior knowledge, this is a way for everyone to get some prior knowledge. Secondly, I wanted them to struggle a little bit. I wanted them to not know exactly what they're going to learn in this lesson yet, but to try to put the pieces together because there's so much research out there that supports when we have to figure things out ourselves, we remember it a lot longer versus if someone just gave us the answer. And then the third part is many of our students come from very culturally diverse backgrounds. And I personally know from observing hundreds of classrooms as an instructional coach, we do not give students enough time to bring in those perspectives and that heritage and those different ideas into classrooms discussion. So another component was that they had to work together and they had to come up with these different perspectives. And it was all open-ended. These are open-ended tasks that allow multiple approaches, but at the end of the day, we're going to summarize it either with a pattern, a relationship, or a concept. And that's going to be our anchor through the lesson. But this is how we kind of spark the unit. It's not something you do every single day because it takes about 15 to 20 minutes, but it's a great way to get a core concept for a unit before a teacher goes into teaching a unit. And it can be any core subject.
Yeah, I love so much, and I'm glad that the research supports the fact that when kids figure it out on their own, it stays with them longer. I am a special education teacher, and I had the luxury, and I truly think that this was a luxury, of time. I could give my students the amount of time that they needed to figure some things out on their own. A lot of gen ed teachers, probably maybe all, don't have that luxury because you got to get to that all that material that's going to be on the standardized test. And so they have to, well, I'm sorry that they don't understand this, but, you know, I've got to get to Z by the time we hit March. And I don't have time to wait for those who are struggling with it. And so I do think there's a lot of either accepting not a student's best work or just saying, well, here you go. This is what it is. And you have to deal with it, whether you understand it or not, and moving on.
It's really sad. I mean, seeing you vocalize it just brings a pain to my heart, because really, what are we teaching children? What are we really teaching them about learning? Learning should be a joy. The same thing as teachers, we should enjoy learning, but a lot of teachers do not enjoy learning. They do not enjoy going to professional development. Actually, I was just reading a study by Advanced Courses, and it was saying almost 70% of teachers are dissatisfied with professional development. So if they're dissatisfied with professional development, and that's supposed to be something that's supposed to help engage their curiosity, inspire them, get them to wanting to learn so they can bring that energy into the classroom, we're going to see keep seeing a huge disconnect. But I believe curiosity could solve a lot of these problems. There's a quote, I don't know who said it, but it says, curiosity is the fuel for discovery, inquiry, and learning. And it really is the holy grail of teaching. An effective teacher is very good at getting students curious, getting students to think about something first, to connect it with their lives, to connect it to real world things that are happening, to make it more real so that they go beyond the curriculum. But if we continue to focus just on standardized testing, we will just stay in a curriculum. We will have a bunch of students who don't care anything about the world and don't have any solutions for world problems.
Right. And, you know, I feel bad for educators because, you know, I think a lot of them have the exact same belief that we have, that learning should be fun, that, you know, you should be able to have different activities, different ways to get that curiosity involved. But our legislators are saying, and society, well, they have to do this. And we have to be able to assess that the product that you're putting out into the public is a valid product and a good product. And the only way that we can do that is by a checks and balances system of tests. And so you, teacher, are going to be assessed on how well your student is because of their score on these tests. And by getting all the different parts of the components of the curriculum in between September and May or June. And, you know, it's so frustrating to me to think that that's what our general education teachers and our public school districts in general are facing every day.
Yes, actually, we have a decline in student curiosity within the American educational system. And there are several factors that contribute to that. You just spoke about one of the factors, the standardized testing pressure. You know, the overemphasis on these tests often forces educators to focus narrowly on test preparation. Also, we have some very rigid curriculum, and many classrooms follow this rigid curriculum and leaves little flexibility for teachers to deviate from their established lesson plans. You spoke about it earlier, how you had a lot of time, but most teachers have a lack of time. And so if you have a limited time and you have this extensive content to cover, that's going to leave you with little room to go into exploration and curiosity-driven projects. So, I mean, I'm aware of a lot of these things. And because of that, that's why I came up with these quick inquiry tests, because I knew most teachers, especially in middle and high school, they don't have time for like a 3-week inquiry project where the student is guiding all of the questions. It's really, really nice. But because we have this little thing on top of our heads, we we have to come up with some systems, and we have to come up with things that are practical, efficient, and that are going to also still give us results and also get us to a common goal.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit more about, can you give us some examples right from the book Spark Curiosity of what an actual activity is like?
Okay. Well, first off, I always try to base them on some type of real world example. Why? Because my students are coming from different backgrounds. So I want it to be open-ended. I want to provide opportunities for exploration, and I want it to be flexible. And I'm trying to also make it engaging, where sometimes you could be in a math class and they're like, why is she making us do this? But there's a concept that I want to get out of it. So let me pull up a couple of them here. I have one from elementary math. So what I like to do first is, in the book, I put key concepts students should know in middle school science, key concepts they should know in elementary science. And I just put the concept, and underneath it, I just put the task. So for example, elementary, third through fifth grade, they should be able to understand and apply basic arithmetic operations, you know, addition, subtraction, multiplication, division.
Sure.
So one of my tasks is, okay, I want you to work with your group, because you're always going to work with at least two other people. Inquiry tasks are not designed to be solo affairs. They're designed to really get us building a community of learners. So I'm going to ask you to put together a plan for a party. I want you to calculate, how many people do you want to come to your party? How much food do you want to have? What's the cost of decorations? And develop a budget for me. You have 7 minutes to come up with this task. So how many different ideas are we going to generate in this class? And they're going to be thinking about things, and then we're going to talk about it. Okay, so you're going to have a party for 20 people, but your budget is $500. You're going to have a party for 10 people, but your budget is $1,500. You know, like, why is there a difference? Let's talk about it. And so students are now explaining. They're giving their reasons, their evidence. And at the end of the day, we're doing critical thinking. It's like in the background, but it's critical thinking going on. And at the end of that task, then we're going to say, okay, what did we learn? Like, what's our big takeaway? Our big takeaway is, there are a lot of variables, right, when it comes to planning a party. But at the end of the day, when you think about your guests, you're going to have a certain amount of guests. They're going to have a certain amount of money that you're going to spend on food and decorations. And then you got to have a budget. And many of you, I saw you use an addition. Some of you were using multiplication. Some of you were using, we're going to learn all about this in this unit. And bam, now they see something practical that relates to that. Another task, real simple.
Can I stop?
Go ahead.
Okay, so I want to talk to you a little bit about that one.
Yes.
And I mean, if this particular comment will travel through all of them, I'm sure, because you said every one of them, it's a group. And what I love about the fact that you're having them do this in a group, and that everyone is participating, and there's no like grade at the end of this, and so everyone can hopefully feel a little bit safer in presenting their ideas and giving their justification, is that there isn't one way and only one way to do certain things. And having, you know, a lot, I'm thinking that in these inquiry tasks, one student might say something, and that's going to spark something, to use your word, in another student, and go, oh, well, I hadn't thought about that. And so hopefully that's also teaching them that collaborative, that, you know, it's okay to ask for help and get somebody else's perspective. I don't have to solve whatever problem I'm faced with all by myself. I can ask other people. I can get other perspectives. I can take that and, you know, tweak my idea or help them, you know, broaden their idea. I don't think we have enough of that either in our schools anymore.
We don't. I used to be an instructional coach, and I went into hundreds of classrooms, and all I heard was, that answer's wrong, that answer's right. And one of the biggest differentiators in an inquiry task is that the teacher can never say you're wrong or right. Mm-hmm. The teacher has to be like, how do you feel about that? Does anyone else agree with that? You know, they basically have to prove to themselves what they're saying makes sense, and they have logic behind it. And if it doesn't, I'm going to talk to a partner. I'm going to think about it. And, you know, and a lot of times they doubt themselves, because they're waiting on a teacher to give them that confidence, to give them the affirmation. But we need to stop that, because when they take tests, the teacher is not there to affirm you got the answer right. They can't tell you if the answer's right then. So why do I have to tell you all the time when the answer's right? How do you feel about that? Do you feel confident in your answer? Then stand on your ground. Stand your ground.
And love that they're having to justify and give their rationale for things. And it's not just, well, that's the way I want it.
Well, no,
it might be the way you want it, but you got to have some facts behind basing what is caught, you know, leading you to that feeling that you're having.
Also, one thing I let the students know, I said, no matter where you are in the world, no matter what type of job you do, you may be in a room with three or four other people, and you may be presented with a challenge, a problem, or a project. The information you have is just going to be those three or four people in the room. So whoever in that room can come with the best evidence, can have the most conviction behind a reason we should do this or do that, that's how it's going to happen. Because most of the decisions in the world, there's not thousands of people who influence the decisions. It's just right. A few. So I try to let them know, hey, what we're doing now is we're preparing you for real life, because you're going to be in a space where you're going to have to prove to something or put your evidence or put your facilitation skills out there in order to prove your point. And it's not always debating in a law room. You know, there are plenty of opportunities. You got a $10,000 budget. You're on a volunteer committee. What y'all going to do with it?
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Absolutely. And that's the exact thing. I had a administrator tell me one time that he didn't think that I was planning for the future with my students. I said, that's all I'm ever thinking about with my students is what does this look like 5-10 years down the road when they're an adult, when they're on their own, when they're having their own job. I said, that's the first and foremost. I'm not worried, again, because I had the luxury of not having to be worried about.
Shella, can you stop talking about your luxury? I'm tired of you. I just want to sometimes come and just slap you. I had the luxury of having no teacher want to hear that. You're gonna make people feel, you know, they're gonna be hating on you, Shelly. Okay.
I need
to go get my IEP. I need to be going special ed teacher so I can have the luxury of having some freedom.
But I want people to understand that there's a big difference in what. That's part of, I think, what makes special ed teachers successful is because
it is. The ratios are reduced. They focus on what is the goal in their IEP.
Yeah.
And are we working with the teachers to best accommodate them the best way they can. But this idea of these quick inquiry tasks, this is very new. Campus Insights is the training company I work with. And we have about 10 other consultants. We've done most of our work out of South New Jersey, but we received a couple district contracts in Texas now. So we're expanding into Texas, but we have like a full three different types of trainings because this is brand new. I mean, just the idea of creating these tasks is a challenge for teachers. That's why I created this book, and I have almost 100 plus examples in the book. And if people who really want to focus like on career focus courses, especially once you get to high school, I have almost 50 different types of tasks to kind of put students in the real world, make them feel like they're a part of projects. Because when I was in school, when I was working on my my bachelor's degree, the classes I remember the most was the ones that I worked with other people on something. Like we were given little mini challenges, and that's all that sticks in my brain till this day. Any other class where I was just lectured to and I just took a test. Yes, I may have made an A in the grade in the class, but I don't really remember it. And if we want students to really remember things, it has to be more social. Because even as a teacher, wouldn't you say the PDs you went to when you were able to dialogue and have discussions, those are the ones you remember the most? Or something you had to do like hands-on, or you had to work with something and figure something out. It's like common sense, but I think people are hearing so much noise, they can't hear the sound of curiosity. The sweet sound of curiosity coming into the classroom, allowing students to make their brains hurt a little bit, because I felt that all teachers, you know, one of our biggest jobs is to make students' brain hurt a little bit every time they come to our class, because that shows they're thinking. And if a student comes to your class and their brain does not hurt a little bit, there's no thinking going on. And if there's no thinking, there's no growing, there's no learning going on.
Right.
If it's all given to you, like regurgitated. But I got a few more examples I want to share, because, you know, you need a couple examples to really get this. So for example, learning 3 and 2D shapes is really important around upper elementary to middle school. So I will give the students a paper square, and then I will give them a three-dimensional square. And then I will just ask them, develop a description for both the objects. Be ready to explain your differences. So they're going to go in thinking, okay, why is this one different from this? Oh, this one's flat, or this one, oh, I can put things on top of this one is kind of sticking out. You know, they're using their words, because one of the other things is I don't want students to feel they have to have the vocabulary to understand concepts. So I'd like them to use any words that they can come up with versus saying, oh, you have to use 3D. No, we're going to teach you about 3D. That's why we're trying to put it in your brain that there's a difference, because most of us haven't learned that there's a difference. Most of us are just saying, okay, here's the definition, move on about your business. No, I need to explore it on my own, so that I have those concrete examples in my brain, so that when I move on and I start doing volume, length times width times height, okay, what is volume compared to area? Okay, so now I have this paper, I'm showing them area, and now I have this box and I'm saying, this is volume. Things are starting to click. Can you see the difference? It's like, I can't teach you that if I just put the little X and length times width. What does that mean? And that is really one of our biggest problems, is that students have no concept. They don't really know what they're really doing, because no one has taken the time just to make it basic, like really, really basic.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to that we expect teachers to teach so much, and we just always seem to be adding more things onto the plate of, I know you're going to slap me, but onto the plate of the gen ed teachers, but yet the special ed teachers, you know, it truly is a luxury, because the gen ed teachers don't have it. And even if it's just a few minutes, I mean, it's a luxury that a special ed teacher
has. It is a luxury.
They can truly focus on the individual, where the gen ed teacher has to focus on the content. And there's a big difference when you're thinking about looking at schooling from content or students and how we approach that. And so, again, you know, like, and materials, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, you said you handed them a 3D square or the flat square. Like, you know, I think there's a lot of school districts that don't have the materials either.
But well, if they don't, there's called most. Because of COVID, we didn't like COVID, but praise God for COVID, because pretty much it made one-to-one devices for almost the whole nation. So there are lots of 3D programs available. I use a tool called Nearpod. I also wrote a book about Nearpod, Beginner's Guide to Nearpod. But they have several, like over 100 different 3D objects in there too. So you could pull up some type of technology to show. And then they have FET simulations that kind of can help take away from that. Because anytime you have prep, and you have to bring objects in, remember, it takes time to pull those things out. And especially, again, you're a middle high school teacher, you got people rotating in. So there are some creative ways to make this happen. Because, again, these tasks, they need to be short and quick, 5 to 7 minutes, because a group can focus for about 5 to 8 minutes. They can focus on something. You got a timer. We're ready to go. And it's also training them to show that we don't have a lot of time sometimes in society to do things. So we need to be very laser beam focused on everything.
Yeah, we absolutely do have deadlines to get. And I just wanted to say, hi, Fran, thank you for joining us. And anyone else who's joining us, if you notice what I just did there with Fran, that she let me know that she's here in live and where she's from. So if you're joining us as well, please be sure to do that so Olivia and I can say hey to you. And if you have any questions for Olivia or myself during this, please put those in the chat as well. All right. So we've had two examples.
For math, how about social studies? Let's look at social studies. So one of the concepts in social studies is being able to understand and analyze world history and cultures, right? So I would come up with something like, what is one thing from your past that you feel you will always remember and why?
Oh, okay.
So they're thinking about, I get to connect with my students now because they're going to bring up things from their past. They're going to talk to me. And then we're going to talk about, you know, how does the past relate to our futures? So another one is about developing an understanding of geography and its impact on culture and society. So that's the big concept. That's a huge concept in social studies. So I would say something like, if you lived in a cold and snowy place, describe how people would live and what they would eat and how they would build their homes. So I could see a five-year-old coming up with something for this. Do you see that? You know, I think we underestimate the potential in students because we're so focused on outcomes. We don't think about the input. What's the input? What's the learning? How do we measure the learning? Y'all so focused on the outcome. Y'all can't focus on what is going into it.
Yes.
How are we measuring that part?
Yep. Exactly.
That's a critical part. And when you do questions like this, the students are not ready for them. They actually feel like, ooh, I wonder what our inquiry task is going to be like this week. I wonder what else are we going to be forced to think about or focus on. It's really, really exciting to put these tasks together and just sit back and let students just think. I remember I taught a science class and I had a third grade science class. And one of my tasks was, tell me why flowers have colors.
Oh,
this is third grade. The concept is we were going to focus on pollination and how insects help with pollination and what is pollination. But from that discussion, and I still remember that was almost 15 years ago, Shelley, just to let you know, what I still remember from that discussion was the kids were thinking. They were coming up with all these different reasons. But then one child was like, my granddaddy has a beehive. And I think flowers have color because it helps insects see them. And they need to go to the different plants to do something to the plants. I don't know what it's called, but the child was remembering an experience, sharing that experience.
Yes.
And it was relating to our learning. Then we got into talking more about, okay, so flowers have colors for a reason. You just discussed a couple reasons, and we would put maybe the top three reasons we heard in the classroom. Well, how does these reasons relate to our science topic today? That's what we're going to explore in today's lesson.
Yeah. That's amazing.
So the first part is developing the inquiry task. The real challenge for teachers in our trainings is facilitating the discussion. So after they do something, now you have to go around and you have to kind of sit back and facilitate a discussion. And that's real hard, especially if you're like in a math classroom where you're used to just modeling. Most of us just learn from a person standing on the board and just write after me. No one asks you why are we doing this step, and can someone repeat what James said, and could anyone want to put that in their own words? Because when students put things in their own words, they remember it too. I always used to tell my when I did my professional developments, I said, when I say it, they don't remember it, but when they say it, they remember it. So anything that's a concept or something very important, I wanted them to remember. I had to get the students to repeat it. I had to get them a way to say, oh, okay. Oh my goodness, Austin, you a genius, Austin. Who can repeat with, you know, and one of my criteria is that everyone is always ready to repeat. You might not be able to formulate your answer, but anyone in the classroom can repeat.
That's cool. Yeah. And I mean, again, thinking about the four things that help us learn best, VAKT, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and tactile. So if we're writing it, if we're saying it, if we're hearing it, you know, if we're manipulating it somehow, all of us learn better that way. The more of those things we can get involved in any lesson, the better we're all going to learn it. So it's, you know, there's so many things that I think
it reduces teacher burnout too.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things is teachers, we're doing all the thinking in the classroom.
Yep.
We're doing all the mental work. We got to be able to shift it. And for at least 20 minutes in a 50-minute period, I was shifting that mental work to the students. And they were liking it. And then they would come back and they would tell me about things that they've researched or something else that they didn't think about before. Now they're thinking about it. They went and researched snowy places. Oh, Miss Odeleke, did you know Alaska doesn't have light for so many months? Really? Why are you doing work on Alaska now? Oh, because that inquiry task you did about world history and cultures, it really got me thinking about other places that I never thought about before, especially hearing some of the students in my class, because the students in your class could have so many different experiences to bring knowledge. They also are carriers of knowledge. And I think we underestimate that sometimes too. Another quick one. I love this one. This one is understanding and identifying major historical events and their significance in history. So that's a concept. We got to be able to understand major historical events, right? So I ask students, create 3 visual pictures that represent a struggle.
Oh, that's nice. Now that would be really difficult for me because I cannot draw. So,
and then some of the pictures they come up with, it lets you know their stories. It's like I get to see them and see their stories. And really at the end of the day, when you are sparking this curiosity in students, you start to see their potential. And I really feel like I want to create more fearless educators. Like that is one of our main missions, is we want to inspire a culture of fearless educators. And one of the ways to become fearless is we are fearlessly seeing things in our students they never saw before. And we are speaking them into reality. So when students share things and I say, you know what? You have the mind of a great scientist one day. You have a mind of a great analyst. You're really good at analyzing. You can go in so many different fields. You know what? I noticed in math class when we were making that budget, you did that so quickly. You could be an event planner and you could plan events for the White House. We have to speak these things into students because they have no idea. They don't know what their potential is. No one's going around. Their friends ain't going around saying, hey, man, you're going to be big one day. You're going to be a genius. You're going to make a lot of money. You're going to be a great entrepreneur. How many people are saying that to kids?
Right. Exactly. That's so sad and so true.
And it's so real. The things I speak into my students, I see them, it comes out. And so at the end of the day, we are very powerful. I think educators think, oh, we on the low podium. I think I'm the most powerful thing out there in the universe. I influence minds. I create greatness in front of me every day. And there may be a cure, a technology, a charity, an organization, something that I have inspired in one of my children, one of my students that could go out and help the world make it a better place. And I think if we could focus and anchor ourselves on things like that, it would take away the noise that we're hearing, because, you know, a lot of teachers talk about all this pressure, but I'm like, at the end of the day, it's you and your 20 or your 30 or your 40 students every day. 90% of the time it's you and your people. Think about, what do you want to see? What do you want to see blossom out of those people in a year's time? And put those images in your mind every day when you go in and you talk to them and you teach them.
You know, I had a very selfish motive when I was a teacher or when I was teaching. And that was, I wanted to be that teacher that my students said, you know, it's because of Mrs. Kino's belief in me that I am where I am today. And I wanted that for every single one of my students. I wanted to be that teacher for all 100,000, but I didn't have 100,000, but however many, you know, hundreds or thousands of students that I had. I wanted to be that one for every single one of my students. And I think teachers need to have that, because that inspired me to keep pushing forward. When it was tough for me to figure out, why is this kid not getting this concept? Why is that kid behaving that way? Why is this kid, you know, whatever? And instead of going, I just don't know, and I've tried everything I can think of. Well, maybe I did try everything I can think of, but you know what? I work with a whole lot of people. I have a whole internet in front of me. I can look, and you know what? Just because I've exhausted what I know to do right now doesn't mean that if I go searching today, I'll find something. Tomorrow, I'll find something else. Maybe today I don't find something, but tomorrow I do. And I never wanted to give up on any of my students. And I think if we just have a different mindset approach, that every one of my students is a caterpillar going to be a butterfly someday. How can I help that student become the best butterfly? Because I'm selfish and I want to get all the accolades later on in life.
You are funny. She said, I want all the accolades in life.
But you,
I mean, I just like relationships. I just want to know, you know, I don't need them to come back and find me. I just don't want them to come back and rob me. And we got a lot of students. If we don't give them something, some type of essence, they said school is a gateway to the prison. A lot of students are feeling hopeless. They're feeling like they can't learn. They don't have teachers like Shelley or like Olivia in their life. They have people speaking bad things into their life. So that's why we need to be able to speak good things into them. And then at the same time, I'm not asking. I believe that we do too many things sometimes. It's like because again, we do all the thinking. We want to do everything. We got all the steps written out. Why you got to write 20 steps for them? Why? Stop it. Teachers of America, stop it. You're burning out yourself. What we have to really think about is, how can we facilitate their thinking? How can I push them to do more of the work? And those are the types of strategies teachers need. They need facilitation strategies. They need facilitation strategies on discussions. Thinking about, how can I get my students not just to turn in work, but to the work to be meaningful, the work to be real world connected. Because I think the more we can connect homework or activities in the class to real world scenarios, the more internal motivation they're going to have to complete it.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. And as we've been talking, I just keep thinking, you know, that I love to talk about behaviors. And one of the things that I say is, when you're wanting to increase a certain behavior, the more honest and sincere praise you can give, the more of that wanted behavior you're going to see. So just along the lines of what you're talking about, when you're speaking life into these students and saying, you know what? I think you're going to be a great event planner because of how quickly you got that budget figured out. And when you can sincerely say that, kids absorb that like a sponge. And I think that what you said, you know, that we have to speak so much positivity into our kids because they're getting so much negativity elsewhere.
Again, so much. I mean, even when it comes to dress code, a lot of times they might not be in dress code. Okay, the boy come to my class. He got his pants sagging. I can't say, hey, boy, you know, your pants is sagging. Hey, Jordan, I expect you to have a belt when you come into my class because you're going to be a business owner one day and you need to start preparing yourself now. That's a whole different energy from, you're showing, you know, it's like, and we need training on that because, again, we live in a very negative society where people just, they always say what's wrong. They never tell you what's right. And I try to, we have a training on just that, on how to make reluctant students turn into engaged students. And one of the biggest ways is just what we say to them. They're reluctant because the verbiage they've received most of their life has been negative.
Right.
But just by me changing my verbiage, now I'm engaging them into the learning. And these tasks too, I'm telling you, my IEP students, my special ed students, all of them feel like, you know, I can play a part. I have a contribution to make. And she is not focused on if it's right or wrong. And it's a paradigm shift. We have tons of teachers who write me all the time and say, you know, Campus Insights and spark curiosity. Because we've been doing these workshops about 3 years now before the book came out. And one thing we kept getting from teachers is we need more examples. So I was like, let me put out more examples. But they're saying, I see a shift in the learning experience in my classroom. I see the shift.
That's awesome.
I see a shift in the relationships because now I know more about a student that I never, ever would have got on an interest survey. It's certain things you just can't get from paper and from the little surveys you do at the beginning of the year. Yeah. And it all at the end of the day creates this feeling that this person cares for me. This person is interested in my well-being in the future. And I just feel like learning is an adventure. It's an adventure. And it's amazing what a classroom could take you so many places in this world just because of the ideas that we can expose people to.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about four parts of an inquiry task. Like, what are the basic four things? Mm-hmm. The first part is an inquiry question. And this should be focused, again, short time frame. I'm not asking them to read a 30-page paper and give me your opinion and highlight all this. No. And it should whole purpose stimulate thinking and conversations among students. Secondly, you got to think about what is the aha moment? What is the key concept, the pattern or relationship? What is the main thing that students should get from the task? You need to write that down somewhere, at least one or two sentences of this is the main concept I want students to get from this task. And then the discussion part, I would create at least three STEM questions. It allows for a focused conversations and it facilitates the group learning. Teacher then acts as a facilitator, encourage students to talk among themselves, reinforce ideas, clarify their reasoning, and participate in a rigorous discussion because there is a task that everyone got to do. And then the last part of it is we got to summarize what we did. Now, I write down a summary as a teacher, but I don't let the students see the summary. Because, you know, a lot of these classrooms, we just throwing PowerPoints on and we ask the students just to write their notes. When students write my notes, they don't remember my words. When they write their words, they remember them. So one of the whole purposes of the summary is to summarize what did we learn in the inquiry task and what the aha moment was. This is me pulling it out and it should be written on a whiteboard or a chalkboard or on your virtual board and develop with the help of the class. Okay, so, and maybe I started off with three words, but then I have them finish it. And then when we finish it, it's not more than 2 to 3 sentences maximum. And I have that. I have them put that in their notebook. And you know what they feel? They feel like they're in a community. They feel that my teacher took the time to engage and summarize what we were learning right now. She didn't just do something at her house this weekend. And then thirdly, less writing for me. Less things that I got to go put on a PowerPoint.
Amen. I hear you with that for sure.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-mm-mm. We really got to reimagine our classrooms. We really got to change some things because the problem is only going to get worse if we keep doing the same things we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned at the beginning that you were telling me about something new that you've got coming up. Are you ready to talk about that? Or are we still talking?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no problem.
I don't want to jump until we're ready to jump.
No problem. Well, we're talking about reimagining the classroom. Well, how do we reimagine the classroom? We got to be strategic in our professional development. And one of the biggest challenges and pain points for a lot of school administrators is professional development. It's like you got to do it, but how strategic is it? You know, how well out is it? Is it, do you have a 2-year plan? Do you have modules and courses lined up for at least 2 years with deliverables and things that you want to observe differently in the classroom? It's a whole process. So the more we work with schools, the more the feedback is there needs to be a little more support because we're so focused on the PD, but we're not focused on the planning of it. So Campus Insights is going to be hosting a webinar on how to develop strategic planning for professional development training. And this webinar is going to really, really focus on some of the five pain points that principals face. One of the biggest ones is aligning district goals and school improvement goals to teacher buy-in, teacher needs. How do you get both of those together? So one of the key parts we want to focus on in the webinar is how do you, and I'm going to do real life examples. I'm going to pull a district plan, focus on some goals. I'm going to pull a sample school improvement plan and say, okay, now I know what my three core focus areas are for the school and for the district. Now the second part is, well, how can I put that in a needs assessment for my teachers so I can get feedback from that? And then from there, the next step is, okay, now that we have that, now what are the PD areas? What are our goals? What are the things we want to see in our classroom? What are deliverables? What do we want teachers to deliver? And it shouldn't just be a test, a standardized score. It should be other things that they actually deliver, that they actually present in a professional, a learning community. It's, I'm sorry, but it's like sometimes we're so focused on that test, we forget about all the little pieces that we really need to know how is this system, how is this school functioning? So we have a link for our wait list. It's something we're going to do in October. We haven't set the dates quite yet, because we are also working on creating like an online course to go with it. So principals could come back, they can share it with their teams. And it also has an ebook that's going to go with the course. And we're developing a 40-page document with templates with survey links, with things that are already created where you could just copy and paste. You can tweak some things because we know time is limited. And we want to make this thing simple and easy to accomplish.
Yeah. So I just tried to post it to the Facebook, and it let me post it to YouTube, but not to Facebook. So I'm going to read it out because I don't know if Facebook's being weird.
Okay. You know what? Let me just create a tiny URL for it. Okay. I create a tiny URL for it, and then I will post it up as a tiny URL. Okay. Right. So just give me a few seconds.
But while you're doing that, I also do want to mention your website is campusinsights.com, and that's campus with a K. So www.campusinsights.com. And then you also had a link to your book through Barnes and Noble. Where did I put it? It's down here somewhere. There it is. I think that's the one. Yep. So if you go to barnesandnoble.com, and then just type in Spark Curiosity. I'm sure we'll pull it up too. But the link is here. I did put it in the chat. So whether you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, you should be able to just click on it in the chat. Both I had it in YouTube and Facebook. So I'm going to grab this and put this in here. And for
it's also available on Amazon too, if people want to order it there. But I like the Barnes and Noble. I'm old school sometimes.
Okay, my computer decided to take a nap. I don't know what it's doing. But for those of you who will be listening to this as a podcast, this is being broadcast in September of 2023. So this wait list that we're talking about will be closed. And the class will have already opened.
We're looking to host it, like I said, October, mid-October, early October. We just want to finish a couple other pieces for people who might want to go a little deeper into the content. But my consultants and myself, we just have a passion for learning. And that is why I started Campus Insights. I have always loved learning. Kindergarten, I got an award for asking the most questions. Always been an inquisitive person, very curious person. I went on 3 study abroads while I was in college with different colleges. I was in the College of Engineering. I went with the College of Education somewhere. I went with the College of Social Workers, social work somewhere. I went with the College of African American studies, went on Caribbean study abroad, and those opportunities and those real world connections to culture and people just said, what else is there? What else is out there that I don't know? And that's what we want to put in students. What else is there besides this? There is more out there than besides this. And if you can't find what you want, baby, you can create it.
Yes.
We are little mini creators. You don't have to just say, I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't fit here. Well, baby, go create something for yourself. Go create something for yourself, but you got to put in the work. You got to put in the work. So that love for learning, and rarely most, I've had a couple teachers that really have shaped my world, because my mama was not into education. She never looked at one homework assignment I did. I'm telling you, she wow. came to maybe one awards ceremony. And every year I went to awards, I was a top producing student, but it was the teachers around me that were helping to mold me, and they saw potential. They saw maturity in me. And all of those things helped me. And I said, you know what? I got to give this back. I got to help other teachers realize that you shape students. You may have more of an influence on them than a parent will ever have in this world. And once you realize that, you'll get away from all this politics and all this noise, and you'll focus on what is your why and what is the main thing. What is the main thing? And my main thing is I got to get these kids to think. I got to get them to be productive. I got to discipline them, and discipline doesn't mean just crack the whip out. Discipline right. is work ethic, like be yeah. responsible, do yeah. something, have accountability, because that's how you're going to make it in life. So that's my motivation. That's my why.
It's not about the accolades for you?
No, I don't. No, I'm a humble person. I really don't care about accolades. I can get 1,000 awards, but if I see students and I see teachers going out there making a difference, and they shoot me a little email every now and then, or someone says, you know, what you said on me. And I have even people from college sometimes contact me out of the blue and say, you know, you told me something when I was in school that changed my life. And you be like, really? You just thought you was just being an average person. But right. we just don't know the power of words, and the fact that every single day you're spending more time with someone's child than they are. You are spending more time with someone's child than they are. You have power. You can create the future. You can help shape the world. But we got to change our teaching methods. And we have to think of ways to get students to think more and get them curious beyond the curriculum and not just focus on the test. I never focused on the test. My kids always got fours and fives. And they're like, what you doing? I'm saying, I'm focusing on thinking. I give them some concepts. I focus on thinking, because if they can think, they can look at any question and they can at least put 2 + 2 and say, let me figure out if it's 4.
Right. And I have to say, I'm being very facetious and saying that I want all the accolades, but it was that mindset.
Everybody need their motivation. That was your why, Shelly. That's your why. I'm never going to hate on your why. Because your why is that internal motivation that we all need. And we need to help students find their why too. Why are you here? Yep. Why are you learning this? We got to help them because they don't know. Hey, baby, here's 20 whys for you. Just pick one for today. And when you figure out yours, then you can get one. But for today, pick one of them. And I'll holler at you later.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was a kid, Whitney Houston was a very popular singer. And she had the song, and I don't even know what the title of the song was, but the first line was, I believe that children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way.
Yes.
And that's, like I said at the beginning, you know, that was always my focus for my students, because they truly are our next generation. They're the next inventors. They are the next scientists. They are the next bankers and stockbrokers and entrepreneurs and business owners. And you know, so I joke about it because I really, but it did. I'm like, I want to be that teacher. Like when somebody makes it, and I would honestly, I told students when they make a movie of your life, I want Julia Roberts to play me.
I love it. I love it. You like, hey, your imagination is a preview to your future, Shelly. So if they was imagining it, it could be a preview to their future, because people need ideas. People need ideas. And the more ideas we can share, the better it's going to be for everybody. The more ideas we can share. And this idea is We need to be fearless. I think you talked about something earlier about how you were willing to try new things because some of your students weren't getting it. Well, we've dedicated a huge course on developing action research. So what is action research? Basically, every educator is a researcher. Why? Because the kids in front of you, they haven't been researched yet. You have to research them. You have to try new approaches with them. And so we have just a simple little, it's not an experiment, but it's basically like how to design a basic research project with your kids where you try a new approach, you measure the outcomes, you tweak it, because 50% of what we do in a classroom is research-based. The other 50% has to be action research, because you have to be adapting to these kids. And you've been teaching 20 years and you still using the same. No, you're going to have problems. You're like, that didn't work 20 years ago. We got a new kind of student. I need to try new things. That's why I'm going to professional development. Sometimes outside of my school, I'm going to conferences. I'm looking for courses online so that I can say, let me see if this works with my kids. Let me see how I can tweak it. And I think if we get more teachers wanting to be researchers in their classroom, being more of a facilitator, not feeling like they got to carry all of the load, and stop complaining, stop saying what this person don't have, what resource you don't have, because there's a lot of places in this world, they don't even have air conditioning. They don't even have a projector. They don't even have one computer, and those kids are still learning. So it's like we focus on all of this extra stuff, but the learning experience, we can control that. We can still make that, you know, a positive experience, and we can bring joy to learning. And when you have fun, when you yourself as an adult can find joy in participating in a PD, when you can feel like it's interactive, it's contagious. That it spreads like gangrene, and you go back and you don't even feel like you're working. And that's why when I was a teacher, I never really felt like I was working. I was like, man, I get paid for this. They give me a check. I just felt like I was having fun. The hardest work for me really was just setting up them lesson plans I had to submit to my principal every Friday. That was work for me, because I'm like, I got the plan, but why I got to put it in this form? Okay, let me go and do this little stuff over here and submit it. But I enjoyed every moment being in the classroom. And yes, I had some behavior challenges here and there, but a lot of times I realized I can't call people out in public. I don't do no yelling. I smile a lot. They don't know what I'm feeling. And those people I have problems with, hey, I need to talk to you, Jermaine, after class. Jermaine, we talk. Okay, what's the problem? You know, and I start having one-on-ones, and a lot of that stuff goes away. And I think today, after 9 years of teaching, I think I wrote 4 referrals.
Wow.
I think I wrote 4 referrals, because one of them, he needed some medicine. He came in my class and threw desk everywhere. I said, something's wrong with that boy. And something was wrong with him. But then a week or so later, he came and said he was sorry. But anyway, maybe 4.
You mentioned it earlier. It's relationship. It's taking that second and going, there's something.
But they said, I don't have time for relationships, Shelly. They said, I don't have time. I said, if you don't have time for a relationship, you need to go somewhere. You need to go somewhere. Because if you can't build rapport and people see that you are serious about them and you're firm and you have high expectations and you let them know the expectations, children will rise. But many of our classrooms have relatively no expectations. Very low, very passive, just want to pass you by. So anyway, it's been a nice little conversation with you today. It's been a pleasure as always. I appreciate you bringing me back on your show to hopefully help one teacher at least say that there's another way you can reduce your stress, and let's facilitate some inquiry.
Yeah. And I like here what Fran said, and I think this is a great spot to close out. Focus on the student and the learning. I think that's what we've been saying throughout this whole conversation today. Olivia, thank you. It's been a joy. I've gotten some energy now. I can power through the rest of my day. I thank you so much for that. everyone who joined, Fran, and anyone else who was joining with us, thank you so much. Make sure, if you want a chance to get a copy of Olivia's book, that you become a YouTube subscriber to my channel, you share this, and you comment. You don't have to share it on both Facebook and YouTube. Just one or the other is fine. And then you do that within the next 48 hours, and you'll be entered into the drawing to win a copy of her book. Thank you all, and we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.